Brethren, you and I live in a world that is driven by money. And there's no denying, everybody cares about money. Most people, in fact, believe that the more money they have, that the happier they are. But is this true? Does a healthy bank account or a large paycheck each week bring contentment and prosperity to our lives? What is it that we as Christians should be seeking in life? What parts of this world are we trying to hold on to? Is it money? Is it? Are we trying to utilize every dollar that we gain for our own needs? And in this, how much of our lives we need to consider, are we turning over to God? Are we fully dedicated to living the way He has required and has instructed us to live? And in this, are we giving God His rightful 10%? And so today I'm going to focus on the several aspects of the foundational doctrine of tithing. And before everybody turns off their mental auditory receptors, I would like you to instead consider some of the things that are going to be said today very carefully. Because most people feel that they know all that they need to know about tithing. And they don't need to learn anything else. And a lot of people have actually made up their own ideas of what the tithe is and what should be done with it. And some people think that although money may be important to us as human beings, that God is spirit. And so money is not important to God. And then in this, they have allowed themselves to manipulate and to misdirect God's tithe. But God does care about it, doesn't He? God cares about everything in our lives. Everything that we care about, God cares about as well. In our age, there are many people who actually, in this regard, have begun to question tithing, and they have made up their own ideas about this enduring doctrine. As an example, some believe that tithing is no longer required today. Others think that they can give God's tithe to an organization of their choice, one that has no ordained ministry. Many act as though tithing is low on the priority list, and therefore they tithe only on what is left after they pay their bills, you know, get their food, get their clothing, and possibly even after they've purchased entertainment. And then there are some who don't like what a particular minister or organization teaches, and then therefore they feel they have no obligation to give the Church of God a tithe. What is the truth behind these ideas? And what has led to some of these presumptuous, I will call, behaviors? Are we required to tithe today? If so, who are we supposed to tithe to? Can it be any organization, one of our own choosing? And what about the second tithe? And what about the third tithe? Now, today I'm going to answer some of these questions in brief, and I'll also direct you to the booklet we've produced in this regard. But I'm going to touch on some of the more concerning practices that have arisen in the last several years. So let's turn over to Deuteronomy in chapter 10. First, it's important to establish the fact that everything we have is God's. Now, our human tendency is to believe that everything that we have worked for and everything that we have been given is ours, that they are our possessions, and we think that we can judge for ourselves how to administer our goods. But the truth is, nothing is ours. It never was, it never will be ours. Everything in the entire universe is God's. And God makes this clear in Deuteronomy in chapter 10. And in verse 14, He says, "Behold, the heaven and the heaven of heavens is the Eternal's, thy God, the earth also, with all that therein is." And so this is just one of a number of scriptures that declare this truth. I mean, we're all quite familiar with the scripture that states, "The silver is mine, the gold is mine, says the Eternal." Very familiar passage. And so God owns everything, and no matter what we might shape the elements of that are found in this world into, the gold and the silver into coins, or in the case of currency today, the wood pulp used to make paper money. Regardless, he owns everything. He owns all of it. But by his kindness, he has given each of us the earth and all of its resources to use. And in return for our use of God's creation, he requires something back. But something very minor, minute, if you will, in the scope of things. He requires a tithe. And so most people will accept the fact that the human governments of this world have a legitimate right to levy taxes. And few will question taxation of the people. However, what the vast majority of people do not realize is that there is another, a prior claim to that which we have, our income. Leviticus in chapter 27... Leviticus 27. The word tithe is the Hebrew word maasra, and it means a tenth part. Basically, it simply means 10%, as we are more familiar with. And from the beginning of mankind, God's faithful have given a tenth of their increase back to them, back to God. And so we have the example of Abraham, who tithed of all, as it says, of all that he had to Melchizedek. It wasn't just his produce and his flocks. Everything he had tithed to the high priest of Melchizedek. In Jacob, we see that he gave God a tenth of all that he had gained. And these examples of these can be found in Genesis 14 and Genesis 28, and we're not going to go there. During the time of the patriarchal system, the tithe was given to Melchizedek, and this was the priest of the Most High God. But with the nation of Israel, God instituted a change in the administration of the tithe. It wasn't a change in the tithe itself, but in the administration of it. And so after their 430-year stay in Egypt, God had delivered the Israelites out of bondage, and he brought them to Mount Sinai, and here he reissued his laws, laws that were already in good standing order, but not practiced by the people, as they had forgotten God widely during that 400-plus year stay. And so God, at this time, he created a Levitical priesthood as a part of this new administration, and God had adapted the existing system of tithing to suit an entire society. And so first, God made it clear that the tithe was not something that was theirs to manipulate. They could not do with it whatever they chose. It belonged to God, and such it was holy. As explained in Leviticus in chapter 27, and in verse 30, we're going to begin there. It says, all the tithe of the land, whether the seed of the land or the fruit of the tree, is the Eternal's. It is holy unto the Eternal. And if a man will at all redeem any of his tithes, he should add thereto the fifth part thereof. And this is a subject that is explained in more detail in the booklet. And concerning the tithe of the herd or of the flock, even whatsoever passes under the rod, the tenth shall be holy unto the Eternal. He shall not search whether it's good or bad, and neither shall he change it. And if he shall change it all, then both it and the change thereof shall be holy. It shall be redeemed. Meaning if he converts it into money, you still have to tithe on it, right? It shall not be redeemed. You can't take it back. These are the commandments which the Eternal commanded Moses for the children of Israel in Mount Sinai. So the Eternal taught Israel that the tithe was not to be used in whatever way that the people might see fit. It was sanctified, which means set apart for a holy use. And he directed that it would be used to support the Levitical priesthood in their service to in the tabernacle and later the temple, and also to in their service to God's people. They were going to be a nation under God, and as such, they would tithe to the Levites, as God stated in Numbers. If you go over there, Numbers in chapter 18. Oh, I like it when you turn right to a chapter. God stated, Numbers in chapter 18 and verse 21, behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tenth in Israel for an inheritance, for their service which they serve, even the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. And so it was understood by Israel that everybody was to tithe. There were no exceptions to this rule. Even the priests who received the tithe were required to tithe. Yes, they were required to tithe on the tithe. As God told Moses in verse 26 of the same chapter, "Therefore speak unto the Levites and say unto them, when you take of the children of Israel the tithe which I have given you from them for your inheritance, then you shall offer up a heave offering of it for the eternal, even a tenth part of the tithe." And so here is what is known as the tithe of a tithe. And the reason I want to make this clear is that this term has been abused in the past, and people have designed what the meaning of a tithe is and what it was for. And again, that's explained in detail in the booklet. I won't go into it at this time, but this is what it meant, that the priests were to tithe on the tithe that they received. And so here we have, in a basic form, and there's many other scriptures we can go to, but this is the blueprint for God's system of tithing. The tithe belonged to God, and it was to be used by the priesthood alone. Nobody would argue with this truth. It's a fact, an irrefutable fact of the scriptures. Back to Deuteronomy. In chapter 14, in addition to this tenth, this first tenth, there was instituted a second tithe. This was also a tenth, and this was to be set aside. However, this second tithe was not to be given to the Levites. It was to be kept by the people or the individual family, if you will, but it was still to be used for a holy purpose. Now, when the nation of Israel came into the promised land, they were given instructions about keeping the holy days, also known as the feasts of the eternal. And so three times a year, they were to travel to a location where God had placed his name, and they were to celebrate the feast of unleavened bread and the feast of weeks and the feast of tabernacles, as we continue to celebrate today. Now, in these three, the people were to rejoice as they attended holy convocations, and they were to feast upon their offerings and the second tithe as they worshiped God, the great God of the universe. And so in order to make the journey and to ensure that everybody would have a wonderful time, God had designed this second tithe to be kept, along with an offering that was to be made when they came up to keep the feast. And this was so that the celebrations would be extra special. And you can see how wonderful this is. I mean, God's telling us to keep this these funds aside, and he's saying, now, spend it on yourself. So, I mean, isn't that great? So, here we have this edict in chapter 14, beginning in verse 22. It says that you shall truly tithe of all the increase of your seed that the field brings forth year by year, and that thou shalt eat before the eternal your God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there. Tithe of your corn, of your wine, oil, the firstlings of the herds, of the flocks, that you may learn to fear the eternal your God always. And he says, if the way, that is the way to go up to the keep the feast, be too long for you, so that you're not able to carry it or bring all of the tithe that you've kept, or if the place be too far, which the eternal your God shall choose to place his name there, when the eternal God has blessed you, then you shall turn it into money and bind it up in your hand, and you shall go to the place which the eternal your God shall choose, and you shall bestow that money for whatsoever your soul lusts after. You can spend it on oxen or sheep or wine, even strong drink, it says, or for whatsoever your soul desires. And you shall eat there before the eternal your God and rejoice, you and your household and the Levite that was within your gates. You shall not forsake him, because he has no part or inheritance in the land. That is, they were not given a piece of property that was their own. And so this is a familiar passage to most people, and it's apparent from these verses that this tithe is different from that which was dedicated solely to the Levitical priesthood. This was a second tithe. And so let's go over to Deuteronomy 26, turn over a few pages to chapter 26. Again, this is just one of the scriptures that indicates the second tithe, it being required and what we are to do with it. But now the big question comes, are we required to tithe today? Do members of the New Testament church have to keep a first and a second tithe? And if so, where is it supposed to be directed? Now, some say that there is no command in the New Testament to tithe. And while it's true that Christians are no longer under the Old Covenant, it is not true that the practice of tithing was discontinued in the New Testament. Let's go over to Matthew in chapter 23. Matthew 23, and I'm going to read verse 23. But first, I want you to consider the context of what we're about to go over. The argument that there is no direct command to tithe in the New Testament is true. And while this is true, consider what need would there be for Christ or the apostles to have laid down a practice that was already in effect and was already being kept by the people. Why would they need to tell the people to do something that they were already doing? Christ, instead, he rebuked the people for what they were doing wrong and not for what they were doing right. Matthew 23 and verse 23, Christ says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! He says, you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought you to have done and not leave the other undone." And so Jesus chastised these religious leaders for being picky regarding issues of tithing while ignoring the weightier matters of the law. And so while correcting these people, it certainly would have been a perfect opportunity for Christ to reveal that the tithe is no longer required. He did not say, you tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and you don't have to tithe, but focus on the weightier matters of the law. He didn't say that at all. No, he said, this you ought to have done, yes, but not left the other undone. And so this shows that tithing was, in fact, in effect during the ministry of Christ. The opponents of tithing look for a direct command in the New Testament telling them that they have to tithe. But what they should be looking for instead is a scripture in the New Testament that tells them they do not have to tithe. And if they did look for such a scripture, they would not be able to find it. There is no such injunction in the entire Bible. 2 Timothy in chapter 3. God's commands are in full force unless he gives us instructions otherwise. Now take, for example, circumcision. This was a command by God. But the injunction that circumcision was no longer required came by a meeting of the ordained minds. And as Christ had stated, if two or more agree on earth concerning anything they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven, because where two or three are gathered in my name, I am in the midst of them. And this isn't talking about having a church service. This is talking about decisions made within the church organization, decisions made by the ministry. And if two or more agree, and the scriptures do not say otherwise, he will be in the midst of the decision. And it will be done by his Father in heaven. And so Christ was speaking directly about authoritative decisions. And we see this principle in action in the book of Acts in chapter 15. And there is not a single word in the entire New Testament telling us not to tithe. In fact, we see that the New Testament church lived by the same doctrine that was given to ancient Israel, that of the Old Covenant. As Paul had written in 2 Timothy in chapter 3, he wrote, "All scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished unto all good works. And so there was no New Testament written when the time when Timothy was a youth or during the lifetime of Paul. There was a New Testament, but it had not been put into writing. Here, Paul is speaking of the Old Covenant, isn't he? And he's speaking only of the things, the only things in the Old Covenant, the entire Old Covenant that had been changed are that which we are aware of, that of circumcision and that of shedding the blood of animals in sacrifice, as Christ died once for all, his blood was shed once for many. So we are no longer required to sacrifice animals today. Matthew in chapter 22. In another example, just days away from his crucifixion, Jesus gave a direct public validation of the practice of tithing. Christ made it clear that he expected his people to tithe. Now, when the religious leaders here were trying to trap him, they asked him if God's people were obligated to pay taxes to Caesar. And Jesus said this in verse 18 of Matthew 22. He says, "Why do you test me, you hypocrites? Show me the tax money." And so they brought to him a denarii. And if you would like, I think I have it in my pocket. I have an actual denarii from that time. It was given to me as a gift. And if anybody wants to pass it around, it's just kind of interesting to look at. If you look at it there, you can see that there's the face of Caesar on one side with also some writing, the writing which Christ refers to in this very passage. And so he says to show him the tax money, and so they brought him a denarii, and he said to them, "Whose image and inscription is this that's on the coin?" And they said to him, "It's Caesar's." And then he said to them, "Render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And so Christ stated that these religious leaders were to pay what was owed to Caesar in the form of taxes, which is required of the government of that land at the time. But, he says, they were also to give to God what was his. And so the subject here was certainly money, wasn't it? And Jesus was referring to tithing. The New Testament church did, in fact, tithe. And even after the temple was destroyed in 70 AD, the faithful continued to tithe. However, there was another change made, not in the law of tithing, but in the administration of it, that is, who received the tithe. It no longer went to the Levites. That priesthood was dissolved. But it then was given to those who became ministers that were ordained by Christ and through the apostles. Hebrews in chapter 7. The Messiah sent his disciples out, and he expected them to be supported by those who accepted what they had preached. In so doing, he reminded them that the laborer is worthy of his hire. And this can be found in Luke in chapter 10 and verse 7. And this simply meant that they were worthy of being paid for their services. Not paid excessively, but just taken care of. Now, Paul reiterates the same principle in a letter to the church in Rome when he wrote that the brethren were to distribute the necessity of the saints. And so in other words, Paul was telling church members that they were to support those people who came to teach them. And so Jesus Christ, who appeared to Abraham in the Old Covenant as the priest, or in the chapters of the Old Covenant, and he appeared to him as the priest Melchizedek, he is our priest, isn't he? Christ is our high priest forever. Now, the tithe has always belonged to him, for he is very God. As the author records Melchizedek took the tithe directly from Abraham. In verse 4 of chapter 7 in Hebrews. Now consider how great this man was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils. And truly, they that are of the sons of Levi, who receive the office of the priesthood, have a commandment to take tithes. So here it is. It went to Melchizedek, then it went to the Levites, according to the law, it says, that is, of their brethren, though they come out of the loins of Abraham. But he who is descent is not counted from them received tithes of Abraham and blessed him that had the promise. And so Melchizedek was given the tithes at first. This is the individual who also took the tithes from Jacob. Then it was given to the Levites as that priesthood was raised up. And so, because after they were raised up to take care of the temple, the tabernacle, then the temple, and to minister to God and to the people, there was a need for these funds. And so God gave a command for them to receive it. And with Christ's ascension to the throne of God as our high priest, followed by the destruction of the temple in 70 AD, the abolition of the Levitical priesthood, there was another change necessary in the administration of the tithe. And the author of Hebrews states this in verse 12, if you jump down there. He says, "For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law." Well, what law is being spoken of here? Well, what is the context? We just read about the law of tithing. It's given to Melchizedek, then to the Levites. And now there's a made of necessity a change of the law. It's the law of tithing. That is what is being changed. Not that it's being done away, but not that it no longer applies, but that where the tithe goes to. It still belongs to Melchizedek. It's no longer paid to the Levites. But who are those that are acting under the authority of Melchizedek? Our high priest, Jesus Christ. It is those in the ministry of the Church of God today. And therefore, the tithe is still used for a holy purpose, as God commands. And so, how could anybody believe that we do not have to tithe today if Christ verified in these places that it has to continue, that it must continue to be given. Believing that tithing actually is no longer required today, it's actually along the same line of thinking of the Protestants, isn't it, who state that the commandments are no longer required today, that we can eat whatever kind of meat we want, that we don't have to keep the holy days. It's the same kind of thinking. Reading something into the scriptures that are not truly there because they desire it. They want it. Sadly, that's happening to some people in the Church of God today. And that's why this message needs to be given. And that's why the booklet was created in this regard, because it is a command of God. It is something that we are supposed to do. It is along the lines of keeping the holy days, of not eating unclean and clean meats. It's right there throughout the Old Covenant scriptures, the same scriptures we use when we observe the holy days and we talk about keeping God's commandments. And so we see that there was a change in where the tithe should be sent. However, you know, it's kind of interesting considering that the church is a spiritual form of Israel. In a way, there's not really much of a change because in my mind, maybe it's just my thinking, but the ministry today are kind of like spiritual Levites in that they act in the same way that the Levites were to. They were to take care of the temple, to handle the things of God, to instruct the people, to correct and to counsel and give advice, a biblical advice. The only thing that really, in my mind, I guess, has changed is that those who are allowed to administer the tithe today are not required to have DNA from the tribe of Levi. But there still has to be this legitimacy. Because of this, because we do not have to be a physical Levite to handle the things of God, and to make use, a right use of God's tithe, the question comes, can we give God's tithe to whoever we choose, even to those that are not ordained ministers in the Church of God or organizations outside the church? You know, there are people who send their tithe to somebody's website because they believe that it's doing a good work. And there are people that are not ordained that have created informational organizations that accept God's tithe. And while there might be some benefit to that information that is made available, can they rightly use the tithe that is designated to be given to God's ministry? Well, there is also, as an example, there are some who will send God's tithe to a charitable organization, such as Battered Women or the Muscular Dystrophy. But we need to ask, is this an appropriate use of God's tithe? There's nothing wrong with giving these organizations funds, but can we use that which was designated by God to be sent somewhere else? Can we use those funds? Does God approve of this? And the answer is going to obviously be no, but we need to prove this out. 1 Corinthians in chapter 9. In understanding who has the authority to administer God's tithe, we have to realize the fact that the Levites who received it were ordained for their positions. God chose these people to take care of the temple and to take care of the spiritual needs of the people. And so in this, they were also to conduct holy convocations and were to be advisors, if you will, according to the word of God. And so who holds that position today? Who has that position? Well, it was handed down to the apostles, who also began to ordain elders, and the church began to grow. And these are the ministers that I believe have the ability to administer God's tithe. And the purpose in this message, don't get me wrong, the purpose in this message is not to get people to send their tithe to us, the Eternal Church of God. The purpose is to correct a wrong behavior that has been gaining ground in the church, and it is our responsibility to do such a thing. We are ministers of God, and as Ezekiel points out, we're supposed to act as watchmen, and if we see something happening in the church, something wrong, and we don't point out the error of the way, the blood could be on our hands. And so we have a responsibility to make this known to the people, because there very, very well may be people that just do not understand the principle of tithing. And so, in 1 Corinthians in chapter 9, it says, "Do you know that they which minister about the holy things live of the things of the temple, and they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar? Even so has the Eternal ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel." And so those who are ordained to preach the gospel should also be able to live by their calling. And for this reason, the church began in the days of the apostles to ordain elders and ministers whose sole responsibility was to preach the gospel. But can anybody just decide for themselves that they are going to start a work and they are going to fund it with God's tithe? Are they legitimate for doing so? Can they rightly use it? 1 Timothy in chapter 3. Ordination is a process, and unless an individual is spoken to directly by God, such as Jeremiah or Ezekiel or Isaiah, to become a part of the church ministry, there has to be this process of training, of evaluation, and ordination. And it usually begins with a series of steps. And for this reason, this process that has to take place, Paul wrote to Timothy in verse 1 of chapter 3, he says, "This is a true saying. If a man desires the office of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop must then be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, one that rules well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man knows not how to rule his own house, how shall he then take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride he falls into condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Likewise must deacons be grave, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, not greedy of filthy lucre, holding the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. And let these also first be proved. Then let them use the office of a deacon, being found blameless. And even so must their wives be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things. And let the deacons be the husbands of one wife, ruling their children and their own house as well. And so, why is this criteria listed for ordaining people listed by Paul in such great detail? Well, it's because there has to be this process of ensuring that those people that serve God are legitimate. There has to be a good report amongst the people. Somebody can't decide for themselves, I'm going to be a minister and I'm starting my own work outside of the church. This isn't the process that God uses. They have to be of good reputation. They have to be found themselves worthy of such responsibility. And they cannot ordain themselves. And the reason I say this is because it has actually happened in our age. I am aware of one group that actually did this very thing, and that the congregation chose the person that they wanted to be their pastor, and they ordained him. They laid hands on him and ordained him themselves. And this is not how God works, and this is not legitimate. And so some might not like the individual that's chosen to be ordained by the ministry, but that is not our call, is it? If we trust that God is working with his church and that he is working with the ministry, we have to trust their judgment in the matter of ordination. And so the church has been given this authority. They have been given the authority to ordain. And in this process, they must interview. They have to examine individuals. They will talk to others. They will work with them. They will teach them. And they will make sure that these people are capable of serving, and that they have the heart of one who is going to serve God and his people faithfully. And so this process, again, requires two or more to agree. And Christ says that he will be in the decision, in the authoritative decision of the church, if they come together and decide that this is what should be done. Now, when the apostles, as an example, chose the first deacons of the New Testament, they instructed the brethren to go out and to seek seven men of good reputation that were full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom. And these are the men that they would appoint over the business of being deacons. And they chose a man, Stephen, that was full of faith, as the scriptures say, full of the Holy Spirit. And Philip and Procurus and Nicanor and Timon and Parmenas and Nicholas. Now, this decision was not made hastily. No. It required people who had the authority to ordain such. And they did so understanding who these individuals were, what they were like, and what they were capable of. They were of good reputation. And again, Christ said that he would be in the decision. And he was, under the leadership of the apostles. And so again, it comes down to this issue of legitimacy. Who can rightly receive and administer God's tithe? Is it Jim Bob's website of Bible commentary? Is it the American Cancer Society? Or can it only be done through the Church of God? The answer is that it was always given to Melchizedek, and then it was given to the Levitical priesthood, and then it was given to the Church of God. And if a lay member or even a deacon designs a work outside of the church, they cannot rightly claim the use of God's tithe for it. They can fund it with other means, but not with God's tithe. Sadly, what might be an issue for some people today is they do not like or they do not agree with a particular minister or doctrine of the church, and therefore they refuse to tithe to it. However, we have to consider, is that really a choice for us to make? Is it? We can judge the righteous judgment and say, okay, well, I'm not going to practice that doctrine because I think the scriptures say otherwise. But can we refuse to tithe because we don't like what a minister in the church teaches? Can we choose to not give because we do not agree with them? We can't. And I want you to consider, for example, the biblical account of Eli, who was the high priest in the temple. Now, Eli is the man who mentored who would be the prophet Samuel. And Eli had two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, and they did that which was evil. And they did this while they were ministering in the temple. However, did God tell the people to not tithe because the priests or the priest or his sons did something wrong? No. God never declared for Israel to stop tithing at all, ever. And so we also, I believe, we as God's people, we have no right to judge for ourselves whether or not we're going to tithe to the church. It's not our call to make. Once we decide to commit ourselves to God, we are committed to doing everything that he tells us to, not just pieces of it, not just some of the law, some of the commandments, not just refraining from eating pork once in a while, but all the time. And once we start deciding for ourselves who we're going to send God's tithe to, we put ourselves in the position of judgment. And this is God's position. It is his job to judge. He's the one who sets up kings and he sets up priests for his plan, for his purpose. Whether we agree with a particular minister or not, it's beside the point. You know, we're obligated to tithe to God no matter what. That's who we're tithing to. We're not tithing to that minister or that organization. They are acting as God's representatives. And so we are tithing to God. And that's how it has always been. And that's how we should think of it, because that is actually how it is. Now, in today's sad state of affairs, the church has many splinter groups. And yes, they are all splinter groups, despite what some of them may say. We are not the splinter, we are the church. No, we're all splinter groups. We are all splinters of the larger trunk of the tree known as the Church of God. But with all these organizations, you know, if we do not like one, we can send our tithe to another. Now, you know, whether this is helpful or not, I don't know. I don't have the answer. But all I'm saying, you know, is if you do not agree with what a particular Church of God, a splinter of the Church of God, teaches, you can't stop tithing because of that. You should find one that you agree with and that you are comfortable sending your tithe to. And even if you're not, we have a responsibility to God to do this very thing. And so we have more choices today, and more choices does not actually mean better, better choices, but we do have more choices of exactly what address, if you will, we are going to send God's tithe to. But also there's a problem with this. There's a problem because it leaves room for each of us to start trying to decide who is more righteous. And that can be problematic. But the bottom line is having a difference of opinion with the ministry does not excuse us from tithing. And it doesn't allow us to start sending God's tithe outside of his church to organizations that are not legitimate. Let's go over to Haggai in chapter 1. A hard book to find unless you have the little tabs. Just after Zephaniah, which is also a hard book to find. Zechariah, shoot for Zechariah, and then it's the one right before that. Now, I want to make it clear to each of us that this subject is not one that I enjoy speaking about. I really don't. I mean, nobody likes to talk about money, unless, of course, we're rolling in it. Then we love to talk about money, right? But this is kind of a sore subject in some ways, because it can be perceived that the minister is saying, send us your money, send us your money. And that's not the case at all. We are to send God his money. Those in the ministry happen to be acting on God's behalf. And so I don't enjoy talking about this subject. But, you know, if you think about it, I don't really enjoy talking about pride either, or deceit, or love is a more enjoyable subject. But you know, these are issues that happen, that occur because we're human. Even though we're God's people, we have God's Spirit, we're human. And so we have these problems, we have these difficulties, and the ministry has to talk about it. You know, it'd be great if we never had to talk about deceiving or lying. That'd be wonderful, because everybody was not lying or deceiving. But that's not the case. There's problems out there. And so we have to address these issues. And of course, it's not my intent to get everybody to start sending their money to us. But you have to send it to a church. A church of God. You have to. Our responsibility as of ministers is to recognize what's wrong and teach it. And that is what the purpose of this sermon. So money is a sore subject because, you know, people have a hard time making ends meet. And so they don't want to talk about it. And believe me, I know. You know, we have student loans, credit debt, we have bills that have to pay, car payment, medical bills, all of these add up. And sometimes we wonder, you know, we get frustrated. Well, how am I going to make ends meet? How's this going to work out? However, they do work out, don't they? It does work out. Somehow it always does. And I've heard people say in the past, and I know that there are many out there who think this, that might not actually utter these words, but they will say, I can't afford to tithe. Think about this. As Mr. Armstrong said in this regard, the apostle of our age, we can't afford not to tithe. Truly, we can't afford not to tithe. Now consider this in this regard. If we don't have enough faith to do what God asks of us, and to send him our tithe, and trust that he's going to provide for us in our obedience to him, how are we going to have enough faith to get through the tribulation? How are we going to have enough faith to make it into the kingdom? Now consider the example of the temple. There was a time when the temple under the Levitical priesthood laid waste and was in great need of repair. And yet the people neglected it and were more concerned with taking care of their own. In Haggai in chapter 1, and in verse 3, then the word of the Eternal came by Haggai the prophet, saying, is it time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses, and this temple to lie in ruins? Now therefore, thus says the Eternal of hosts, consider your ways. Consider your ways. You have sown much, and you bring in little. You eat, but do not have enough. You drink, but you are not filled with drink. You clothe yourselves, but there is no one warm. And he who earns wages to put into a bag with holes. Thus says the Eternal, consider your ways. And so these people, during this time, were taking care of their own, and they were neglecting the house of God. They were not providing for the house by giving God their tithe. And in this selfish behavior, they were not prospering. Oh, they were working. They were gaining wages and raising crops, and they had to drink, but they were always wanting. And it was because God was not blessing the fruit of their labors. And it was as if they were putting their earnings into a pocket of holes. They still remained hungry and thirsty and cold. And here God now explains the solution. In verse 8, he says to go up to the mountains, bring wood, and build the temple, that I may take pleasure therein, and be glorified. Thus says the Eternal, you looked for much, but indeed it came to little. And when you brought home, I blew it away. Why, says the Eternal? Because my house that is in ruins, while every one of you runs to his own house. And so consider the concept of what is taking place in these scriptures. How many of us have done this very thing? Do we make sure that our needs get met, that our bills get paid, that we get those things that we desire, but we neglect taking care of the house of God? Do we seem to not prosper and wonder why? Could it be this issue of tithing? We need to ask ourselves. that question. God continues to say in verse 10, "Therefore, the heavens above you withhold the dew, and the earth withholds its fruit. For I called for a drought on the land and the mountains, and on the grain and the new wine and the oil, on whatever the grounds bring forth, on men and livestock, and on all the labor of your hands." So because these people would not take care of that which they were required to, God hindered the fruit of their labors, and they would not prosper. A quote by an author who's unknown says, "You should give according to your income, lest God make your income according to your giving." Interesting thought. And we see in Haggai that very well might be the case for some people. And so you and I, are like children, and we need to learn commitment and responsibility and priority. Now, God could just take his tithe easily. It's his. Everything's his. He could easily just take it and do with it as he desires. But as a loving father, he wants us to mature, doesn't he? As parents that bring up our children, we want them to mature. We want them to be able to make the right decision on their own and not always have to be there lording over them, telling them, go this way, go this way, go this way. And our purpose as parents is to raise them up in the way, and then when they're older, they will walk in it. And that is what God is doing with us as his children. And so God allows us to make decisions, doesn't he? He doesn't always send out a lightning bolt every time we sin, or nobody would be alive. But he allows us to instead make choices, and so with the hopes that we will make the right choice. And he also wants to see, what are we going to do? What are we going to do when he is not there lording over us? Will we be faithful and give to God what is rightfully his or not? You know, I've personally seen people that I know could not afford to tithe, give it anyway. And there are even people who receive government assistance or unemployment who choose to tithe on that, even though we feel that that's the receiving third tithe and they're not required to. But they want to give. They're compelled to give because they want to give back to the church and to the God that has provided so much to them spiritually. And this is admirable. This is admirable. And this is the heart of an individual that God is looking to when he is going to make up his precious jewels. And we need to consider something. Though it is required, giving is more than just a responsibility. It's a privilege. It's more than an act of obedience. It's an evidence of our faith and trust in God. And so it's an honor to be able to contribute to the work of God on this earth. And still the truth is, it is also our duty. Malachi in chapter 3, just over a few pages. The edict of tithing goes right along with keeping the commandments, with observing the holy days, with refraining from unclean foods. There is no separation. Tithing is a basic principle of God's people. And so consider, how could any of us handle the complex that is going to come in the kingdom of God if we cannot perform the basics in the now? Still, there are some who put tithing on what I might refer to as a self-designed priority list. And so consider something. Would we ever dream that keeping the Passover was optional? Would we ever think that we have to refrain from eating pork occasionally? Would we ever entertain the thought that adultery is okay in moderation? No. Never. It's absurd to even think of such a thing. And so why then would we ever think that tithing is something to be done only when we can afford it? Optional. Situational. Some do not tithe because they can't afford it, and yet they hope that God will at some point bless them so that they will have enough that they can tithe. Now, consider that line of thinking, though. Can any of us name a single instance in the entirety of Scriptures where God blessed someone for disobeying him? You're not going to find it. It doesn't happen. How could we ever expect God to give to us more money, a better job, or a more fruitful crop if we do not tithe as he requires us to begin with? It's not going to happen. And so, you know, we would never dream of not making our car payment. Right? Would we ever think, okay, I'm not going to make my car payment for the next year in the hopes that the bank is just going to give us the car for free? Would we even consider not paying the water and the electric bill, thinking that the water is going to keep coming out of the faucet and the lights are just going to stay on all the time? No. Well, why not? Why would we not think of not paying our bills in this way? Well, because they'll turn off the electricity. They'll shut off the water. They'll repossess the car, right? And so we know we have to make these payments. We have to do it. These are facts of life. In order to give, in order to receive, we must give, right? And God tells us that he will give to us. He will. If we will give to him, the most profound two-letter word in the entirety of Scriptures, if. I will do this if you will do something for me. And actually what he is doing for us, or what we are doing for him, is truly in our benefit. It truly works to our benefit. Give to God what's right, not what's left. And so, how important is tithing to God? How important is this issue to God? Well, we can ask him, and maybe he'll give us an answer, or we can look to the Scriptures and we can find the answer there. But the answer to this question can be realized in another way if we ask ourselves something. And it is this: how important is God to us? Tithing is a reflection of how dedicated we are to God. Because if we refuse to tithe or make excuses to not do so, what other areas in our life are we not turning over to him? Where else are we not refusing to do what God commands us? What other violations of his commands are we making excuses to break? Do we occasionally eat a pork chop or have a shrimp cocktail? No, we don't. So why would we only occasionally send God his tithe? Some people are doing something similar by not fully committing themselves and ignoring this command. And here's an example, if you will, in Malachi, an example of how important this command is to God. Malachi in chapter 3 and beginning in verse 6. I am the eternal. I change not. Therefore, you are not consumed, O sons of Jacob. Yet from the days of your fathers, you have gone away from my ordinances and have not kept them. He says, return to me, and I will return to you. See? Do something, and I will do something for you. But you said, in what way shall we return? How? How shall we return to you, God? He gives an example. Well, will a man rob God? Would we steal from God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, in what way have we robbed you? And he says, in tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. And so God states that this issue of not tithing, it falls under the umbrella of the eighth commandment, you shall not steal. This prophecy written here in the book of Malachi, it was recorded for those people who live at the end of the age. It was written for us. And God says, return to him. Well, how? In what way? Well, a direct example is giving to him what is rightly his. Stop robbing God, as he says, and put his tithe back into his house, as he continues to say in verse 10. Bring all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. And try me now in this, says the Eternal of Hosts. Because if you do this, he says, I will open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such a blessing that there will not be room enough to receive it. The reality is, when people refuse to tithe or misdirect where they send their tithe, they are actually refusing the blessings that God promises them for so doing. God, who cannot lie, says that the blessings for tithing will come back to us many times over. However, because we sometimes don't see these blessings immediately, and they might happen to occur over time, people don't recognize that it was God's hand that brought the blessing to them. But I have seen cases many times where people were given a bonus, were given a pay raise, a new job, or huge discounts on equipment, or even a free car, in one example. I've seen this because these people were faithful and they tithed to God. Now, personally, I came into the church quite a while back, and when I began to tithe, I got a new job, a well-paying job. And then when we had our first child, I asked for a raise so that I could help to pay for the expenses of a growing family. And my employer gave to me several thousand dollars above that which I asked for. If that isn't God's blessing, I mean, how often does that happen? You go to an employer and ask for a raise, and they say, yeah, you know, that sounds good. I'm going to give you more than that. Wow, that doesn't happen too often, does it? And I believe it's a direct blessing from God. And so God often, he works dramatically like this with new converts. And then as we gain faith, the blessings might not come as frequently, but they will come. And this is because God is testing us. He is building our faith. He wants to see, you know, who is going to remain faithful even if times get tough, even if it's hard for you. Are you still going to remain faithful? He's testing us. He's seeing who's who in the zoo. And sadly, in our age, there are people that are proving that they're not going to remain faithful. But my hope is that they will be turned around and that we all will come to repentance and that we will all give to the great God who gives so much to us. Nehemiah in chapter 12. Nehemiah 12. And I think they're going to wrap it up over there. Now, all of this, or I shouldn't say all of it, but much of what we have discussed today is available in greater detail in the booklet the Church of God has produced, which can be ordered on our website, or you can call us and ask for it, called The Truth About Tithing. And other issues that are addressed in this booklet, which are very helpful to many that they have questions on, are things such as the year of release and the Jubilee. You know, are we only required to tithe on agricultural products, which is not the case? Is the tithe calculated on gross or the net? You know, things such as inheritance or pensions, unemployment and Social Security. You know, what is a tithe of a tithe? You know, is borrowing from a tithe okay? We've pretty much covered just about everything, but after going through or writing this sermon today, I think we might add a few new subheaders in the future if we get around to put it on the list of things to do. But it's a very, very good book, and it's based entirely on what the Scriptures tell us in this regard. So I highly suggest people read that. But I want us to consider something. You know, Nehemiah was commissioned to rebuild the temple and to restore the work of the ministry. Upon so doing, he met with a considerable amount of resistance by the people that is the Israelites that were returning there, because many of them were half-hearted in their commitment to God, and therefore the half-heartedness showed in their efforts. And so Ezra and Nehemiah had to correct the people and put them back on track again and again. And that's revealed to us in the books bearing their name, as well as some other places. One of these instances was regarding tithing. And so Nehemiah 12, and beginning in verse 44, it says, "At that time were some appointed over the chambers for the treasures and the offerings, for the firstfruits and for the tithes, to gather into them out of the fields of the cities the portions of the law for the priests and the Levites. For Judah rejoiced for the priests and for the Levites that waited, and both the singers and the porters kept the ward of their God and the ward of the purification according to the commandment of David and of Solomon his son. For in the days of David and Asaph of old there were chief of the singers and songs of praise and thanksgiving unto God, and all Israel in the days of Zerubbabel and in the days of Nehemiah gave portions of the singers and porters every day his portion, and they sanctified the holy things unto the Levites, and the Levites sanctified them unto the children of Aaron." And so the people were reestablishing what was to be done in the temple and all of the duties of the Levitical priesthood, including the singers and the porters. And it was a joyous time, and everybody was really happy about this. But the zeal that the people had during this time fluctuated, and it didn't last for long, and soon the tithing slacked off. What was the result? Chapter 13, if you'd go over. Chapter 13, in verse 10, Nehemiah wrote, "I perceived that the portions of the Levites had not been given them, for the Levites and the singers that did the work were fled everyone to his field." And so they weren't being provided for. They could no longer, you know, continue to support themselves. They had to go out and work and, you know, try to take care of themselves that way. They didn't have the time needed to take care of the things of God, as was to be their duty. "And then contended I with the rulers and said, why is the house of God forsaken? And I gathered them together and set them in their place, and then brought all Judah, the tithe of the corn and the wine and the oil, unto the treasuries." And so Nehemiah had to go back and reestablish, okay, look at you, people aren't tithing. You've got to give the tithe here so that these people can take care of the temple and provide for the duties therein. And so there exists today a similar thing, and that there is a commission given to the Church of God by Christ himself to preach the gospel as a witness to the world, to feed the flock, to go out and to baptize in the name of the Father and the Son and into the Holy Spirit. This the Church of God does, doesn't it? But to the best of our ability. We do it with a multitude of free literature, booklets, books, CDs, DVDs, tapes. You know, we have television programs. We have all kinds of different mailing lists. There's internet costs and renting halls and placing ads and purchasing supplies and all of these things. All of it takes money to do this work. And it is God's work. And the Church of God is performing this today. But sadly, I've seen that many of these efforts become limited. And I think it's because of this issue. It's this issue of people presumptuously taking upon themselves if they're going to tithe or not, or where they're going to send the tithe to, you know, sending it outside of a legitimate Church of God. But this wasn't supposed to be the case. Nehemiah states this. He says this wasn't supposed to be. You know, he shows us that the ministry was not supposed to have to go outside of the church and work full time to support their families and themselves, and then come back and work for the church full time to support the work that the church needs to do. God expected the ministers to be taken care of in this way. Again, not to be paid exuberantly, but to be taken care of, the needs that they and their families had. And so when people decide not to tithe, the work suffers, doesn't it? And in the case of Nehemiah, we see here, the Levites, they had to leave the temple and had to go out and start working in the fields. They weren't in there taking care of it like they were supposed to. You know, I've heard some that heard of some people that think that, you know, if the church is not able to do the work that that God desires of them, well, then God must not be blessing it. But at the same time, these people refuse to tithe. Is it really God not blessing it? Is it Him causing the difficulty? Or is He allowing the people to make these decisions so that He can see who is faithful? Who is the cause of the problem? Is it Him? He's the problem. Or is it us? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Are we going to be faithful to God or not? And I tell us today that we have to remain steadfast to the faith that was once delivered to the saints. And we have to continue in this command to show God that we are going to be faithful to Him no matter what, and that we will honor Him in this way with His tithe.